player.
Supernatural.
Is anyone here? Can you please give us a sign?
Supernatural. Confessions.
This is Supernatural Confessions. Welcome to the latest episode. My name is Tim O, and tonight we have E.T., our paranormal investigator of the group. How are you doing tonight, E.T.?
Great. Waiting to answer all your questions, yeah, as well as our investigation questions.
Between the two of us, we've had a few drinks. Since we're going to be talking spirits, have you had quite a few spirits of your own?
I encountered quite a few today. Langevolian 16, Dalwini 15.
Okay, wow. So you are fully immersed with the spirits tonight.
I'm filled with spirits.
Okay, so tonight I thought we'd have a little chat. Unfortunately, Eugene Tay couldn't be with us tonight because he's traveling around. In fact, his exact words to me was he's going to Genting and he hopes that his hotel is haunted. So if it is, he'll be back next week to tell us any stories that he encountered, okay? But in the meantime, you and I, well, we've known each other for a little bit, and I know that you have spent quite a long time, you know, interested and involved in the paranormal investigating business here in Singapore. Maybe for the benefit of our listeners, you can kind of tell us when exactly you started this interest in the paranormal, you know, how you went about actually becoming an investigator.
Okay, this entire thing started probably like primary school. I started borrowing books in the time where we don't really have internet. I was borrowing books, reading about paranormal, reading about like Loch Ness Monster, reading about Bermuda Triangle and stuff like that. But I got a bit more serious just when I was in university. I studied locally in SIM. Somehow, when I was Googling, I found this group that were looking for people to do paranormal research. Then it was called Singapore Paranormal Investigators. I actually wrote a resume. I actually sent it in and everything, and they kind of accepted me. So I was in charge of the gadgets and everything. It was my dream come true because it was something that I've always wanted to do.
Obviously, when we talk to you, you're not just an amateur, somebody who's just started, because there are a lot of people who want to get into the whole supernatural thing on the side. A lot of folks just go there, okay, let's see whether we can hear stuff, let's see whether we can feel stuff. But you actually have quite a dedicated and diligent way of conducting investigations, right?
Yeah, that's why when we started with SPI, I was actually in charge of the gadgets and the entire investigation part. I planned most of the investigations of how motion detection should be put, how we can detect cold spots, EMF. We had to basically use other detectors to check whether there's electrical cables around.
But how did you learn to look out for all these things? Just through books or through just experience? Did you learn from somebody else?
No, definitely not from someone else, but basically from books, from journals, from investigation, as well as logic. In most paranormal investigation, when they say there's someone that somewhere there's high EMF, EMF meter goes crazy, I need to go and determine whether is there something that's causing that besides entities. So could it be a very strong electrical current or some kind of power box or something like that to reduce the investigation chance that, you know, it might actually just be electrical current lah.
Okay, so am I correct to say that a lot of the investigation, rather than just looking for things to detect paranormal activity, a lot of it is really going out there to rule out all the other alternatives?
Exactly. That's basically what I do.
Aside from looking for electrical lines and things like that, what else do you look for that would help you rule out?
Okay, generally, there's been many cases where when you do investigation, people will say don't put on cologne or perfume because it affects the sense of smell. When you come across Puntiana, you actually have this very strong smell of
frangipani. Yes.
So if you have any scent or any perfume, it might affect that. So the various things that we can't do when we do investigation, other things is make sure your handphone is off, because when your handphone, someone calls you and when it starts ringing, it actually gives a spike in EMF. So the number of things that we need to rule out before we can really ascertain whether there's really a paranormal activity that's happening.
All right. And of course, you got to look at the building, the structure, the acoustics of the place. I mean, over the last few podcasts, you've also talked about how sound bounces here and there. Sometimes it gets amplified. Sometimes if it's near a school or it's near like a highway, it can cast shadows and things like that,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yes.
So now let's actually talk about the gadgets, because you started as the gadget guy, right? Yeah. What are some of the gadgets that you actually use, that you actually bring with you, and what are they used for?
Okay, so the most basic one that we use is actually an IR thermometer. I think most people have seen it, especially during the SARS period in Singapore. It's a contactless thermometer, meaning that you don't have to touch.
It's basically a thermometer with a laser pointer, right?
Yes, yes. So you did this.
And a lot of people use this actually in the kitchens to test the temperatures of ovens and of hot oil before they deep fry. I know because I do that.
Exactly.
Okay. I never knew you can use that to actually, discover hantu.
Yeah, yeah. So that's an interesting thing because a lot of people do not know how it works. But basically, what we term as a cold spot is something that actually where temperature actually drops about 10 to 15 degrees from the atmospheric temperature. We had it a number of times during investigation as well as tours.
And your theory, of course, why would the presence of a supernatural entity result in a cold spot?
So no one has really documented it, but basically, my own theory is that entities are there of negative energy, so opposite poles attract. So heat is something of positive energy. So whenever we have a negative energy, like an entity, it actually absorbs temperature from the surrounding, which is why I think entities are dead of negative energies. It absorbs energy from the positive, causing that drop in temperature when we ever use our IR thermometers. That's just one of our gadgets.
What else?
The other one we use is obviously an EMF meter. Some call it a tri-field meter. So basically, it detects fluctuations in EMF. EMF is known as an electromagnetic field. There has been documentation of areas where there's high paranormal activity. There's actually high fluctuations in EMF. The thing is, we don't really know whether the high fluctuation in EMF actually attracts entities or entities actually generate EMF. But either way, the conclusion is that whenever there's high EMF, there tend to be some sort of paranormal activity.
Okay, but of course, when you bring your EMF meter into an investigation, you also use it to determine other sources of EMF as well. So if you bring an EMF meter, say, near a generator, or rather near an electrical circuit board, would you have a high reading of EMF there?
Yes, definitely, which is why I've seen some footage of people saying high EMF where the, in Singapore, the lifts are moving. But because the lifts are moving, there's high electrical current to make the lifts move up and down. Plus, it's crossing across many electrical lines. There's definitely a high fluctuation in EMF. So if someone tells you that the lift moving up and down, definitely there's an entity, I would definitely doubt it because there's huge fluctuation in EMF in just the movement of the lift alone. So there are many times where people show you an EMF meter and things are moving, yeah, but not everything is real.
Okay, but E.T., let's go back to your previous theory when we were talking about cold spots, right? Where you say you believe that supernatural entities might quite possibly be of that negative energy. And so it results in a cold spot because it negates the positive heat, correct? So in this case as well, if EMF is a positive energy, an electrical source, wouldn't the presence of a supernatural entity basically stop it from working? Shouldn't I have no EMF readings?
Which is why, like I mentioned earlier, we do not know whether entities actually emit EMF or are they attracted by EMF, because various journals of paranormal research dictates that actually where there's very high EMF, there's entity. So that's something I still can't ascertain, whether high fluctuation in EMF actually attracts such entities or these entities actually generate EMF.
Do humans, because I know humans have bioelectric pulses, do we trigger EMF?
We do have, but it's not high enough to actually trigger the EMF meter.
All right. So you bring an EMF meter with you. Then what else do you do?
Okay, so besides the EMF meter, IR thermometer, we also have motion detectors. Generally, when we plan an investigation, we plan a field of attack. So we kind of guess where entities will appear. And we actually put motion detectors at various areas. So wherever it bounces off the IR from the motion detector, it actually will sound off. And then we will have a pretty good indication of where the entity might be. That coupled with the other various gadgets that we have, for example, the EMF meter as well as the IR thermometer. Because if, let's say, there's a certain area that's a cold spot, at the same time it detects a certain motion, then we would definitely determine that there's probably an entity around the area.
Okay, I got a couple of questions. How do you kind of guess where an entity is going to pop up from? Because you got to set up your equipment, right, in certain spots.
Okay, so basically we try to set up the entire area. So for example, if you guys have seen Incredible Tales Season 1, if you watched the last episode, Singapore Paranormal Investigators were actually featured. That was an actual investigation that I planned how we should put various things. So you can see we actually cover most areas of the building so that we can capture as many possibilities if there was an entity that's being shown. So besides motion detectors, temperature sensors, IR thermometers, we actually deploy night vision cameras as well to see if we can see any movement or capture any paranormal activity for that night.
Do you usually conduct investigations with the lights off? Is that why you require night vision?
That's the funny thing. We've conducted investigation in the day and at night, but the night tends to yield more positive results than the day.
Your theory on that?
If I follow the theory of the schools and the army camps, which I mentioned in other podcasts, basically schools and army camps are filled with people with huge amount of energies. And if we determine entities to be that of negative energy, positive poles attract, they tend to be attracted by such energy. But the problem is that humans have a very positive life force, which at the same time repels such entities. So when the school children and the army guys book out and etc., there's suddenly a
void,
neutrality in energy in within that area, either in the camp or the school. And that's why they get attracted to the place. So that's how some hauntings actually occur.
Okay. Now, the second question I was actually going to ask you, now this has to do with your gadgets. I'm going to assume most of them are electric-based, correct?
Yes, they are.
All right. But we've also heard about how the presence of supernatural entities can sap electricity. I mean, Eugene has actually told us a few times about his investigations where suddenly the camera batteries are drained or their portable lights suddenly get drained as well. If this is the case, wouldn't that pretty much screw up any chance of you guys capturing anything or detecting anything with your gadgets?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, at the same time, it screws up. At the same time, it's exciting. This was in 2002 where you can watch the clip on Discovery Travel Channel where we were featured doing an investigation at Red Hill. All of a sudden, my gadgets that could run for about 48 hours suddenly drained. Our motion detectors, our cameras, everything just totally drained. At the same time, where we could smell sweet smelling smell, etc. So there's probably a very strong paranormal activity taking place.
At Red Hill, Bukit Merah area, there's a Pontianak haunting that place.
I wouldn't say it's a Pontianak. I have no idea what type of entity it was, but it was something that...
Because, you know, when you say Frangipani, most people automatically start thinking of that lady in white, right?
Exactly. But this wasn't a Frangipani smell. It was just some sweet smelling smell. And most people have shitted out because it was on block. And to keep the long story short, basically, after the investigation, a child spirit actually followed me for about 2 weeks.
Ah, I remember you mentioned something like that in one of our earlier video podcasts, yeah, right? Yeah. Is this video still available for viewing?
I'm sure it is. It's called Secret Singapore on Discovery Travel Channel.
All right, so we've talked about IR thermometers. Yeah. We've talked about motion detectors, night vision goggles or lenses. We also talked about EMF meters. I've heard another term, EVP readers. Is that another gadget you use?
Okay, so basically EVP stands for Electronic Voice Phenomena. We use it quite effectively to debunk the marble dropping case in most HDB flats. So there was once in the Straits Times forum where people were writing in about how they hear marble dropping from the ceiling, etc. in HDBs.
Yeah.
The engineer actually replied about the sound was caused by expansion and contraction of metal beams. So I was really very unsatisfied with that answer, and we actually did an investigation. And interestingly, EVP actually helped us uncover what it really was. What we did was we actually magnified most of the sounds that you can hear in a daily HDB flat, amplified it.
So in other words, what? Is an EVP essentially just an audio recording device?
Yes. It is just an audio recording. Yeah, most paranormal investigators call it an EVP to make it sound a lot more happening. But it's actually just audio recording.
And then obviously once you've got your recording, you can go back using software, you can analyze it a little bit, right? Now,
Yes, so you see the WAV files and everything.
Now, so far, you've mentioned quite a few gadgets. All this seems like a very expensive array of inventory. Is it very expensive being a ghost hunter?
Not really, especially when you have AliExpress. You just need to know the correct gadgets to buy and then you know how to use it and it doesn't really cost a lot.
Really? I can trust their quality now. Sekali, you know, bad quality stuff and all your results get tainted.
Okay lah, I mean, generally, almost everything that you use now, almost every single gadget, even your microphones, your headphones, are all made in China. AliExpress, if you actually read the reviews and follow how people buy, I think it should be fine.
Ballpark figure. Tomorrow, if I decide I want to be a ghost hunter, I'm going to need the bare essentials to conduct an investigation properly. How much do you think this would set me back?
$100 to $200 Singapore dollars.
Really? To get a whole array of equipment?
Yeah, I mean, most of it.
Wow, okay. All right, are there any other gadgets that you use?
Definitely. So we actually use drones as well.
That's got to be a relatively new addition, right? Because when you started, this was years ago, I don't even think they had drones yet.
Yeah, so in the past, we actually kind of improvised. We put night vision cameras on a electric RC car and then we bring it into places like, there was this supposed tunnel that leads to Sentosa.
Really? A tunnel that leads to Sentosa?
If you actually go to Labrador Park, you can actually see there's this tunnel where we actually put our truck into it.
But you guys don't know if it really led to Sentosa, right?
We didn't crawl in because it was covered. But what's very interesting is that the entrance to that tunnel, it was covered with stone which was not from the surrounding. So it's obviously someone trying to cover something up.
Wow, okay, you sure? Sekali the tunnel leads into someone's toilet or something like that.
we did it quite a few times, so it's quite certain.
So that was a time where you used a camera on top of a remote control car. What other things can you use or do you use for an investigation?
That's about all the gadgets that you actually need.
Over the last few weeks, I've seen some videos. One involves the use of a voice box, something for the spirit to talk through when you communicate.
Yeah, I always laugh upon such gadgets because it's just something that gives you random sounds, to be honest. If you really want to hear sounds and everything, you really need a proper recording device, what we define as EVP. Because if you really want to connect with an entity or something like that, a spirit box doesn't really work. I mean, it's just a novelty.
Right. I even saw one particular investigation where they used a plasma ball. And I could only assume that they were hoping that the spirit would communicate through the plasma ball. Because you know, when you touch one of those plasma balls, you know, you will see the lightning spike, right?
It's marketing lah. That's all I can say. Yeah. I mean, it's just something that looks visually appealing, but I have never ever heard of something like that being used in a paranormal research.
Okay. You've got all these gadgets which will help you detect the presence or help you rule out the possibility of a presence, right? Take me through the actual investigation itself, the setup. Do you have to do a bit of research first? Do you have to interview the people to find out exactly what to look out for or what they've been seeing?
Yeah, definitely, because for example, we go science center or even Japanese school, they need to tell us where majority of the hauntings are so we can plan where we should set up our gadgets and everything so we can narrow down where these entities could possibly be lah. So after setting that up, all our gadgets, we need to obviously record data. As much as possible, we try to get integrated gadgets where if something is detected, our laptops or iPad or handphone can pick up all this and we can log it in so that we can further determine where these entities are. For example, if there's a sudden cold spot and at the same time there's a motion that was detected and at the same time there was high EMF, I think there's a very high chance that we could have captured an entity at that point in time.
Take us through the importance of actually documenting everything, because you can't just depend on I think I heard this or I thought I heard this, I think it was around this time. You have mentioned in previous podcasts, where's the documentation, where did you guys write this down?
Yeah,
did
exactly.
You actually put down all the facts so that you can later during the debrief actually run through what you found?
Exactly, because many times paranormal activity takes place in people's mind. So either they're too tired, they had too much thoughts, they just watch a horror movie, they are very creative. I mean, most creative directors probably experience a lot of paranormal activities lah.
Usually when you used to go out, is there a recommended number of investigators who need to go out on a case?
Not really, but obviously the more the merrier, because being humans, we sometimes have lull time, so that's where other people pick up things that we can't pick up sometimes.
But if one person picks up something, it could still be his imagination, right? right? But if two people pick up something, then chances are a little bit higher that there really was something.
Yeah, but it's not about people picking up things, but it's about gadgets picking up things. So that's why we deploy more than one of a certain gadget, so we have some kind of tracking. We need to have like 2-3 gadgets. If all three say there's something there, there's a high chance there's something there.
Let me just stop you there right now, because I have to ask this question. Clearly, you guys have a lot of gadgets. You know, you depend on a very technical approach to conducting these investigations. But you also accept that in the world of supernatural, there are a lot of things that we can't understand. There are a lot of things that maybe science hasn't even come up with the terms or the inventions to actually record, right?
Yep.
Just because a gadget didn't pick something up doesn't necessarily mean you should discount the fact that someone felt something.
Which is why we use more than one gadget. We have like 3, 4, 5 different type of gadgets to ascertain whether we can narrow down if it was a paranormal activity.
Let's just go back to that case you were mentioning earlier about Red Hill, right? Where you guys brought all your gadgets out and things like that. Everything kind of stopped working. You saw signs, you mentioned.
The first thing that happened was our motion detector went off. So you could hear the alarm going off. Next thing was our camera that was filming inside of the flat. The lady that was actually monitoring it, she saw the door inside moving in and out. That's when we actually reacted to our gadgets. Half of our gadgets actually went totally flat. So not everything went flat. Motion detector detected, but other things all went flat.
Now, you said after that investigation, something followed you home, right?
Yes.
And for many, many weeks, you were very, very sick, correct?
For two weeks, yeah.
Okay, so that convinced you that there was something that attached itself to you, correct?
Not really, lah.
No?
I'm still a skeptic. I just felt that the doctors...
You mean there's still part of you that thinks maybe it's coincidence. Maybe I just came down with the flu or a very bad bug.
To be honest, I mean, I think 10% of me says that there was somewhat haunting. But 90% told me that the antibiotics actually work from the doctor that gave me the medication.
And that's the point I'm trying to make. You know what I mean? Sometimes, just because gadgets do not go off or you don't have a recording based on something technical, you could still believe that you have been affected or touched in some way by a supernatural event, right?
Yes, to a certain extent, yes. Some people are more sensitive than others, so you'll probably feel it more than others, lah.
Right. But obviously, as a paranormal investigator, you have to believe that everything must be proven.
To a certain extent, because in our paranormal research, there have been things that we couldn't explain. And that's why we obviously term it as supernatural.
Okay. So take me through a few of your investigations, because you've been doing this for quite a number of years. You heard the stories, people contacted you, you did your research, and you were so confident you'd probably pick up on something. But nothing in the end.
So I don't mean to be a wet blanket, but majority of the times when we go into investigation, it tends to be somewhat psychological, that people tend to perceive things which are not there, may not be actually a haunting. We actually used to have people who actually did psychological tests on such people who reported paranormal activity, and we actually found out it's more psychological than anything else.
How about a cemetery? Have you guys investigated cemeteries? You'd imagine that if there was going to be any supernatural activity, that'd be the place, right?
No, actually, that's where you're wrong. Because cemeteries are where entities actually rest. They don't seek revenge.
Yeah, but what about all these stories about how you go there, you sit there, you try and sell salt to people that go by?
We did everything like that in cemeteries, but nothing happened. So our conclusion is that it's a very restful and a peaceful place. Why people come out with stories like that is because they get freaked out. Feel dead bodies. Humans being humans, that's how you get creative directors, because humans are very creative people. They tend to perceive things which are not there. And then that's how cemeteries come about as haunted places. But if you really do think through things, it's a place for rest. It's total peace. If someone wants to take revenge, it's probably not in a cemetery. It's probably somewhere else.
I'm going to take you through a few, okay? The one over at Choa Chu Kang. We've heard stories about taxi drivers who go there, picking up passengers who are, you know, who suddenly disappear. Have you ever been to Choa Chu Kang?
Yeah, definitely. That's where even Army holds their topography exercise.
Yeah, because it's quite close to Safety, right? It's
nothing there. I mean, we done selling saw with tight string round toes to the banana tree. Mm. Nothing. It's a place of peace and rest.
Bukit Brown. I hear that cemetery was really haunted. Rumors of a Pontianak that, you know, flies around that area screaming in the middle of the night.
I mean, all these stories are always hearsay. But I can share with you something that was interesting. When we did one of our ghost tours over at Bukit Brown, we actually saw a group of about 20 monks. They were around all the tombstones. They had some yellow string tied and it was connected to all of them. We didn't really interview them because we didn't want to disturb their ritual.
What were they chanting in? Was it Chinese? What language?
No, I think they were Thai.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Maybe they were casting out the Pontianak.
No, it didn't look like there was some... Because you can see exorcism, but this was nothing. This was a lot of peaceful chanting.
Okay. Oh, okay. I have to ask you, have you ever been to the cemetery at Pulau Ubin? Because some YouTube show that I was watching, right, said that was actually the most haunted cemetery of them all.
Yes, I've been there. Actually, I have one photo. I need to go dig up that photo. It was a very interesting orb. Because most orbs are either that of dust orbs or insect orb. But the particular photo I took, it was a glowing green ball of fire, which was very interesting. And that was taken in the Pulau Ubin Cemetery.
You guys went there, what, at night?
No, in the day.
So it sounds to me like an orb, right? Can you capture orbs in the day? I thought you could only see this at night.
No, you can capture orbs any time of the day. But most of the time, you can identify them as pollen orbs or dust orbs. But the particular one that I took with my camera was greenish, which is not the usual kind of dust orbs or, you know, basic stuff. It was something I couldn't explain.
But as far as your EMF readers, nothing. IR thermometers didn't capture anything, no cold spots.
At the point in time, we were not using such gadgets. We're just taking photos because we never expected to be so haunted.
Right.
So it's only when upon review when we came back and then I saw that.
So I guess Supernatural Confessions should be planning a trip down to thoroughly investigate the cemetery over at Pulau Ubin, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it's not just that. Pulau Ubin has got very interesting stuff, like, for example, the German Girl Temple as well. So, I mean, it's got a whole host of stuff that budding paranormal investigators who want to go investigate, they should go check it out.
All right. Honestly, E.T., after talking to you tonight, and you've done a great job taking us through the investigative process and things like that, and you've been very upfront about how, you know, sometimes you go out and through your investigations, you don't really find anything, all right? You don't detect anything. How is it that you're still interested in this? It almost seems like you've done enough to prove that there is no existence of supernatural activity.
That's not true. I mean, obviously, I haven't revealed a number of investigation which we have done, and there's nothing conclusive, meaning that our gadgets can't describe, our science can't explain, and things just happen where it seems beyond our realm. So that's what keeps me going, because it's something I've always wanted to know, whether you can explain things by science. I think 80-90% you can explain by science, but there's always that 10-15% that you can't explain.
All right, so you mentioned photos just now with the green orb and stuff like that. We've seen a lot of photos that pop up on the internet, right? We see photos published in books. Yes. In fact, a lot of our members on Supernatural Confessions, the Facebook closed group, have also posted up photos. I want to ask you, how do you spot a doctored photo?
Okay, so in the past, I used to have a guy that analyzes photos. So apparently there are softwares to tell whether it's been doctored. You can actually tell whether it's been edited, etc. The other part is about understanding how various orbs look like. So pollen orbs, insect orbs, dust orbs, they all have a certain look in them. So if anything beyond that, then we will investigate further.
Okay, what about video? Video evidence. Can videos be doctored as well?
Definitely. I mean, you've read about how 60-year-old lady can look like 25-year-old and looking like some hot chicks.
Yeah.
So definitely you can conjure a ghost out of such videos.
So usually when you look at a photo or a video, what is the first sign that tells you, wait, this something's a bit off?
I mean, some things are pretty obvious. You get a number of swing photos at playgrounds.
Yeah, like the latest one that someone actually posted up, right, where they show a swinging on its own.
Yeah, within seconds it pans out and then it pans back again. You can get someone to just run in there and just push the swing again. So that's why it's something I don't really believe in.
Okay.
I guess the majority of things are pretty obvious. And through my, how many years? Maybe 20 years of paranormal research, it's not so easy to capture paranormal activity.
Right.
To be honest.
Okay. And obviously, you know, there have been audio clips that have been put out as well. People claiming, oh, you know, it's the existence of a supernatural entity or something like talking or making a sound or something like that. And I guess obviously because of my background in broadcasting and audio, I'm just going to chime in on this one, okay? Sometimes you just have to know how sound works. Like, I'll give you an example for if you hear an echo, right? An echo never sounds, hey, E.T., hey, E.T., hey, E.T., hey, E.T. That's not how sound actually bounces or echoes, right? It usually goes, hey, E.T., hey, E.T., 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 E.T. You know what I mean?
In fact, most people do not know how well sound actually travels through solids.
What do you mean?
Many times sound actually travels through walls. And majority of Singaporeans actually live in HDBs or flats, even condos. So sound actually travel through your concrete. Although it sounds like something paranormal, but it's just something coming from your neighbors.
Right. Okay. So there you go. Now, if you do have any photos or maybe videos that you've come across, or maybe stories of your own where you suspected something supernatural was going on, we want to invite you to actually send us a message. We're not going to say we don't believe you, okay? We always try to be as open-minded as possible, but obviously with the expertise of a paranormal investigator such as E.T., we may be able to take a closer look and, of course, rule out alternatives that could have contributed to that kind of evidence. All right. And if you haven't already followed us on Facebook, just look for Supernatural Confessions. Our podcasts are available through a whole slew of mediums. You can find it on Spotify. You can find it on Google Podcasts. In fact, check out our official website as well, supernaturalconfessions.com, and that'll give you all the information you need. Okay. So E.T., I want to say thank you very much once again.
You're most welcome. I mean, whenever there's any questions, I'll be fine to not so much debunk, but try to explain.
Okay. You know, preferably on a night where he's not indulging in other kinds of spirits, lah. All right. So that's the end of this edition. Till our next installment, my name is Timo.
And E.T. goes home.
And this has been Supernatural Confessions.
Supernatural Confessions.